Support for this podcast and the following message come from Lagunitas Brewing Company, challenging the status quo and crafting stories along the way. Featuring a wide range of innovative craft brews and non-alcoholic options, it's good to have friends. Learn more at Lagunitas.com.
When the survivors of a mass shooting at a newspaper went back to work, everything was different, even email.
What if someone's sending us more death threats? Or what if somebody sends me a death threat and I don't see it, and then somebody comes and kills all my friends and it's my fault because I didn't read the email?
That's this week on the Capital Gazette series from NPR's Embedded.
If I go to psychoanalysis, I'm definitely going to find some Mexico City issues.
Okay, maestro. Bro.
Tio Felix.
It's good to see you, man. Camilo Lara, welcome to Alt Latino. From NPR Music, this is Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras. Okay, so we got a lot of stuff to talk about, bro. I mean, you're a busy man. You're always a busy man. The first thing we want to talk about is the new record, man. We can hear Mexico through your eyes and ears. I hear bits of the brass horns from banda mixed in with a different rhythm. I mean, it really is a sonic adventure through Mexico, but through your ears, and it's like a pastiche. It's all put together in different layers and different references. That's why I refer to it as a high watermark, because all the musical experiences that you've shared with us so far, you could hear it all in this record, but this one's different. This one's very different to me, to my ears.
It has to do with the subject. The album is called Distrito Federal. And it's kind of a tale of my Distrito Federal. And it's a story about how the city, especially this city, destroy itself and construct itself. That the city that I was born in, it doesn't longer exist. I mean, it doesn't even, it's called the same name. Like, it's now is CDMX, which I refuse to call it by that name, because for me, it's Distrito Federal. And at the same time, when I go to LA, that I spend a lot of time, it's happened everywhere. So it's a tale about gentrification, about how things change for good and for bad. I think in a way the city is a collage. Imagine that Mexico City used to be a lake and Aztecs decided to build on top of it. Then Spanish come and build on top of the Aztecs. And then Mexicans build on top of the Spanish and the Aztecs. So the whole city is kind of really used to destroy everything from the past and build on top. So if you walk on the street, it's a collage of many ideas. The city loves to keep on challenging itself. I grew up listening to Mexican music, and but not on my house. On my house, I used to listening to either the Beatles by my parents or the Smiths and Bauhaus by my brothers. My two brothers are musicians, and one of them, his first band was with Saul from Caifanes, and they rehearsed on my parents' house. So when I was 6 or 7, I saw all these amazing artists just hanging out at the kitchen and Rock and Español History passed by my kitchen. But if I go out to the street, I lived in a place called Coyoacán, that it's where Diego Rivera and Frida Kahlo lived. And it's almost like a small town. And you could hear cumbia all the time and mambo and danzón and mariachi. So I kind of live in those, between those two worlds. And when I start doing music on my own, I really want to sound like De La Soul or A Tribe Called Quest. But my samplers, my weapon was a sampler. And I end up sounding like Pérez Prado or Luis Alcaraz because my samplers were Mexican. Over the years and after many records, you start seeing a pattern. And my biggest passion has been my community, like the music from Mexico, the music from Latin America. I was a big believer when I was starting on cumbia, and I think cumbia has been part of my life, but especially just music that are part of my daily life and music that I feel related to. I think the more local you are, the more international you can be. Because if you do music that you know, you have more chances to do it better. And so I always been trying to play around the music that I know, either if it's mixed with electronic or hip hop or traditional or in films or on my own. No? Ya no quiero sufrir en silencio.
Paloma. let's talk about the Mexican Institute of Sound, or Instituto Sonido de Mexicano. How many people are in this institute, and where are your headquarters, and do you guys wear lab coats? What's happening with the Mexican Institute of Sound?
Sadly, it's just me. I wish to have a big quorum, but not at all. When I was working on the record label, all my friends go and party all night, and they, every time I had to leave at midnight or something, they told me, oh, you're such a bureaucrat. So when I choose my battle name as musician, I was like, which is the most bureaucratic name I could find? So I found the Mexican Institute of Sound. That sounds like a big institution with tons of people working with a suit, and it was just me, sadly.
You're also a very prolific producer. Talk to us about some of the artists that you've worked with, and what is your most recent collaboration?
I have a very eclectic list of productions on my credits, from Band of Horses to Lila Downs to Los Angeles Azules. The most recent, I just did a remix for Run the Jewels that was very exciting, and the guys are amazing. So I like to keep it fresh, just to do things that I don't think I would ever imagine to do. Those are the ones that are really exciting to me.
Looking for M's like I lost a friend. Jump out of my bed like red bread. You go hold the egg, wait to bring a check. When we talk, we commish the car. Keep us in your thoughts, early pressed at the crack of dawn. Weapons heading off, I can hear the friend of mine. See them creeping through the floor. Season's greetings, that greedy season can start. Oh my God, look alive, looking like I live life on a crooked line. Doing fine, you are maximum stupid, I am the guy.
First of all, fuck the fucking law, we is fucking raw.
Okay, you got to tell me and everybody listening your Prince story.
I was probably like 19. I was invited to have dinner with other 10 people at Paisley Park. A journalist from Rolling Stone and I just went. We were super young when we arrived to Paisley Park. It's probably one of the moments in my life that I thought I was in heaven. I wish at that time I had like a smartphone and I can photograph every single thing, because I saw the bathroom with the Prince sign and everything was purple, of course. And when we sit to have dinner, they serve some champagne. And when the main course came, they open these kind of protectors for the food and they open it, and it was Captain Crunch. So we all ate Captain Crunch while we had a sip of champagne. And it was Maite's, the Prince wife at the moment, birthday. So after the dinner, he invited us to his rehearsal space and he started playing. And he played for probably 4 hours, 5 hours. And it was amazing because he was like, what song do you want to hear? And everyone says like, okay, can you play Sweet Child of Mine by Guns N' Roses? Yeah, please. And like, he started playing that song. So it was fantastic. Like, it was a dream come true.
Musicians like that don't come around very often, man. They're sort of dropped here among us and let us enjoy their work and bask in their creative output. And fortunately, and in his case, he left too soon, you know, way too soon.
But what a legacy, right? I keep on going back to the records, and it's so perfect. Such a crazy, different, eclectic discography. In this pandemic, I've been visiting those records that really made an impact on me. And I have to say The Clash is one of them. Talking Heads, Bob Marley, of course. They all have in common that they were kind of a rebel in their own way. They tried to incorporate other rhythms. And those were probably the most seminal records to me, like the ones, or Maldita Vecindad, that they were in love with their own culture, but at the same time, they loved the violent femmes. And so they started doing music like that. That was kind of punk rock, but very Mexican. So I guess all those artists, it really made me think I was not a misfit on my own, and there were other misfits outside that could be friends of mine through music.
You mentioned Mark Ribot, a guitar player, John Zorn, horn player, saxophone player, with very eclectic careers. Like, who else is part of your musical palette? Think people that inspire you or that have influenced you in your work? Because I would put you in that category as well, as like sonic pioneers, sonic adventurers.
I love the Beastie Boys and everything that represents. That's probably the music that I was listening when I was growing up, and completely changed my point of view on how to do music and how can you apply different rhythms and record digging. And I love those guys. Also, for me, Pérez Prado is one of my top artists. I have Pérez Prado and Prince in the same bucket. Not because they are similar, because they were genius both and they invented something. And it's very, as well as James Brown, they completely have create their own universe, and it's very difficult to replicate that. That was a flavor, and it's going to stay there forever. So I like those artists that have a personality, and they invented a micro universe, and you can live on that. And it's almost like Frank Zappa. Once you go there, you can spend the rest of your life just exploring their sounds.
There is a through line, I think, depending on your perspective and what you're used to. But I think there's an arc. There's a through line that connects people like Pérez Prado, the Cuban band leader who was a popular mambo performer in the 50s and the 60s in Mexico, who you mentioned, Prince. And then like musicians you have mentioned before that have influenced you, Esquivel, the Mexican composer and band leader. There's an arc that connects all of that. It's a reflection of musicians who follow their own path, who are distinct in bringing in all of their influences and then creating a sound that is unlike anything that came before.
You're absolutely right, because with Esquivel, for example, when I was 5 or 6, I bought his first record called Burbujas, which was a child's show about this kind of characters, kind of Teletubbies. And the music was so crazy with Moogs and synthesizers and crazy instruments. And it was probably my favorite record when I was growing up, next to The Queen Is Dead from The Smiths. But later in life, I discovered that the same guy that did that record did these fantastic orchestra recordings that were super ahead of their time and used different instruments and play with stereo, do a lot of experimentation. And doesn't matter if it was child's music or music to try your stereo sound system, his music lived through that. And it's crazy to think that music can be so powerful that it doesn't matter if he was doing music for kids or for old people, it was as powerful and unique, no?
Mm-hmm. His mid-career music was used during the quote-unquote hi-fi era when stereo systems were being introduced to homes, and they did crazy stuff like put sounds in one speaker and then another speaker and separate them, and like you said, instrumentation, xylophones, orchestras, electronics. His records then eventually became like rediscovered in a way by people who were just like catching up to his genius.
Yes, I had a chance to spend a lot of time with Esquivel on his last days.
Really?
Yes, he became a good friend. Once I was in a bar and I was telling someone I was doing an article on Esquivel, and a guy tapped on my back and said, like, did you say Esquivel? I was, yeah, I'm meeting him tomorrow. And turned out to be a guy, Brother Cliff from Combustible Edison, a band from that time. And he took me to meet Esquivel, and I started going every weekend. We became great friends. And he was so magical and such a character. He slept by day because he spent a lot of time in Vegas doing night shows that his sleeping cycle just got the other way around. So he woke up at 6 or 7 by night and started writing music. Beautiful character.
Well, I didn't know that. Wow. What a treat, man. What a treat. Certainly, he was certainly a Mexican hero in terms of music, man. What a treat that you got a chance to meet him.
Anestesia. Trajimos anestesia general. No puedes parar, déjate llevar. Los miedos se salen, tú quedas acá. Las piernas temblando de tanto bailar. Mi pico sonido que te va a curar.
Baila el antídoto, mi palabra mágica, danza emblemática, suda anestesia. Baila el antídoto,
palabra mágica, danza emblemática, suda anestesia.
What is your assessment of the Latin alternative scene now? I don't even know if you can call it an alternative scene anymore because there's hip-hop, there's all these other different things. What is your assessment of the legacy of alternative right now?
I think all that big effort of many people in many countries, and the result is that now we have a very horizontal future. I think with the change of the way people is consuming music, it helped to not be Anglo-centralized. And I think the future of pop is not necessarily is coming from the usual suspects like London or Los Angeles or New York. The future of pop is coming from Korea or Lagos or Bogota or Cali. I think the first wave of that was reggaeton, but there's a sort of middle class right behind it that is very interesting, and there are a lot of great, amazing talents that are coming from alternative capitals. Thank you so much, Felix, and such a big fan, and thank you for having me.
Cuando no está el amor, a veces pierdes la cabeza. Por lo que está. This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles on everything you buy. Plus, get access to a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com.
I'm Miles Parks. I cover voting and election security for NPR. Across the NPR network, we report rigorously on the forces seeking to disrupt democracy and provide communities with reliable information. It's Public Media Giving Days, the perfect time to stand with the facts by donating now at donate.npr.org. Thank you.
In this country, more than two local newspapers are closing down each week. As news deserts grow, public radio is a lifeline for staying informed. Keep that service strong with a donation to the NPR network at donate.npr.org. And thank you.